Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. It is Monday, October 26th. Field Yates, Matthew Berry, Stefania Bell, Daniel Dopp, and our entire crew recapping almost everything from Week 7 as we have one game left. That, of course, is tonight as the Rams host the Bears exclusively on Monday Night Football on ESPN. We cannot wait for that game. But there was a day yesterday.
Dude,
it was a day. Man.
It was
Week 7 of the NFL season. Unfortunately, more injuries, but also some dramatic finishes. So we'll get to the injuries and cover them. But I thought yesterday's final, like, 20 minutes of the early slate of games was the best window of finishes we've had all season, and it's not close.
It was a great day of football just in general, like a lot of great games. And it was weird because last week I felt like no one showed up. Like, you know, all the superstars, no one showed up. And it was one of those things where I felt like if you lost last week, you probably had a pretty good team. Because just, you know, like, it was just sort of a weird, fluky week. This week was the week of huge monster performances from some superstars, from some guys you just grabbed off the waiver wire. And just overall, I agree with you. Just the football was amazing. Like, in that Sunday night game, you know, it's never boring. God, with Seattle.
I so wish I lived on the West Coast, because
Dude.
Staying up for those Sunday night games is hard. But yes. Then you have a game like last night, and then you're up for like an hour after it because you're so emotionally charged from that big, big win.
When I lived in LA for years, and I loved it. I loved, like, you'd roll out of bed like right at 10 a.m. like you'd and then you'd watch, and then you're done. You're done at like 10 o'clock at night. It's like perfect.
Yeah. Well, we were in Hawaii when the XFL was still alive, and I'd have a breakfast beer with every game that I was watching.
Sure, sure.
For those unacquainted, breakfast beers are awesome. Let's get to the injuries from
yesterday. Is there a specific Hawaiian breakfast beer that you like?
No, I mean, I'm an equal opportunity beer drinker. I'll try. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
There you go.
Stefania, let's begin. Let's get to Stefania Bell.
Here's the thing. It was an awful... If there was one thing that marred a great weekend, it's that there were a lot of injuries. Poor Stefania has been very, very busy.
And Stefania, let's begin with those injuries in Cleveland. It did not look good for Odell. He got hurt actually trying to make a tackle after a Baker Mayfield interception. What do we know this morning?
We know that he's getting further testing because it's not fully clear exactly what happened to his knee. It's a left knee injury. He was clearly in a lot of pain, and obviously the team is very concerned. I have watched the replay of this injury video, I think 40 times, just to look at the angles, because it's really strange. You know, when we see guys tear their ACL on non-contact injury, it looks fairly consistent. They're usually slowing down, their foot's rotated maybe a little bit outwards, and their knee collapses inward. If you look at what happened with Odell Beckham on that play, he was running, trying to catch up, as you said, to make a tackle, and his leg was extended. It's like he hit the ground with his heel, but his leg was rotated inward, and you see like a quick snap, like a little buckling of his knee, and it was non-contact, and then he goes down. He like gets off of the knee by jumping in the air and goes down. So it's not really this consistent mechanism you would see with an ACL, which leaves open a lot of possibilities, and that's why we don't really want to speculate on what those possibilities are. But after he has testing today, hopefully we'll hear more about the detail.
It sounds serious. I mean, we know, and Baker Mayfield paid tribute to him after the game. This one's for you, 13. You don't typically do that for a guy that has, like, you know, a mild ankle sprain or something like that. So I think Stefania was right. The testing will tell the full picture, but I think we can anticipate this being something substantial.
I would agree with that. It didn't look good. You know, listen, what am I? But didn't look good, and just the reaction and just the commotion around it, just from, to your point, from the teammates, from people that cover the team closely, like, you know, hoping for the best, bracing for the worst.
Football is a next man up sport, and not that we aren't thinking about Odell Beckham Jr. and his well-being going forward, but for those that have them on their fantasy roster, you might have to make adjustments. He's been frustrating, certainly, to roster this year because of the up and down nature of his play. We know his talent is abundant, but he has not been performing, at least from a statistics perspective, that well so far this year. Matthew, is somebody going to have to step up into his place, or is this Jarvis Landry becomes the number one wide receiver in Cleveland and everybody else is just sort of a hope and a prayer type of asset?
No, listen, I think Rashad, I would assume Rashad Higgins would make your waiver wire column this week.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think that's right. I think Higgins is somebody that they like a lot, that's been in Cleveland and for a while, and he's, you know, he's sort of been in and out of the lineup. But I also think, by the way, I think you look at that game yesterday and you see the two touchdowns for Harrison Bryant. Shout out to Shefty. It was his long shot call on Fantasy Football Now. Great call by Shefty. So you look at Harrison Bryant. You look at David Njoku. We'll see when they get Austin Hooper back. But it's a team that's already running a lot of two tight end sets, and it's already a team that's run heavy. So I think Rashad Higgins should be rostered if you need some wide receiver help. But I think, honestly, maybe it's the tight ends that see a little bit more. That, you know, I mean, Harrison Bryant is somebody they like a lot there, and rightfully so. And so that's somebody they think weirdly could be more of a beneficiary, that they just go more to tight end sets and just try to run that offense even more than they already have.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll keep an eye on whether Jarvis Landry gets even more volume. Such a reliable player, we know. The volume was actually okay yesterday, but he had another throw, did Jarvis
Yes,
Landry.
He did. But I mean, I haven't looked, but
No.
I assume Jarvis Landry is rostered in 100% of leagues.
Of course. What I'm saying is just if you're sort of if you had him on your roster, he might become more valuable as a result of this injury.
Certainly. He talented player, and you would assume his target share would go up if Odell Beckham Jr. was to miss time, and that is certainly what we're expecting as of Monday morning. So, yeah, 100% agree with that. I was just sort of thinking about just in general, you know.
Yep. So we'll get more clarity on this Odell injury probably by the time you're listening to this podcast for those on the audio version. Stefania's been a bad, bad year for the Cowboys in a lot of ways, including injuries to quarterbacks.
It was terrible what happened to Andy Dalton, because it never should have happened. I feel like we've had Dallas in that conversation of things, injuries that shouldn't have happened because of late hits. One time when they were delivering one up in Seattle, and this time they're on the receiving end because Andy Dalton was sliding. He was giving himself up, and he took a hit directly to his head and neck. And if you watch the injury when it happened, we certainly saw it many times. His head snapped back, sort of a whiplash mechanism, and then he hits the turf with his helmet almost immediately. So really, there's a double mechanism for injury there. Clearly, there was a lot of concern. He was able to walk off the field, which you love to see. He didn't have to be spine boarded, but in the concussion protocol, and I wouldn't be surprised if this takes a little longer, not only given the fact we just don't know the timeline of concussions, we know that by now, but his neck went through a lot as well on that play. So no Andy Dalton right now, and we'll just have to wait and see how long it takes.
That means that at least as of right now, their new quarterback, 7th-round pick out of James Madison, who had that lined up as the projected Cowboys starter.
Ben DiNucci, right?
Yeah, I was literally drawing a blank there for a second.
Yeah. I believe it's Ben DiNucci.
The only reason I remember is because every time when we were talking about his name yesterday, when he came in, all I could think of, and Field, you might not get this reference, but Matthew Wells, Danny Bonaducci.
That one I know.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Ben DiNucci. I'm like,
right?
Bonaducci.
I know it's DiNucci. Yes,
yeah,
Ben DiNucci.
Why?
So Ben DiNucci and Garrett Gilbert, AAF superstar, would back up Ben DiNucci. Right.
Isn't Kellen Moore still their offensive coordinator?
Oh, yeah.
Can't they just sign him to a contract and throw a helmet on him? And
you know, the team did recently try to sign David Blau off of the Lions practice
squad.
Stop it. No, I'm serious. Oh. And remember, he was the guy that last year, did they beat Dallas last year with David Blau as quarterback?
Let me think. I believe they did, Field Yates.
No, I'm being 100% serious. They tried to do this. So
no, listen, and I don't think this would happen. But given the state of the NFC East, zero chance that they trade for Fitzy? You know,
zero,
that's where I'm going.
Chance, yes. Zero chance. 0% chance. The Cowboys are terrible. They need to look at 2021. Every dollar that they spend this year, more than they are currently spending right now, is one less dollar they have available in 2021. Because if you have unused cap space, you roll it over into the next year. If you take a $4 million cap hit on Fitz, to go, 6-10 and lose by 25 points in the first round of the playoffs, that ain't worth compromising 2021.
You and I understand that. Does Jerry Jones understand that? Because you and I don't get a vote.
Yeah.
My question. No, that's a legit question.
My belief is that there are enough people in Dallas that have the ear of Jerry that are going to caution him about making such a move.
Anyway. So we will see, but at the moment, right now, as of Monday morning, we wish the best for Andy Dalton. I hated that. I mean, because listen, as a Washington fan, I love the victory, obviously, but you hate to see that. It was a cheap hit, and we wish the best of Andy Dalton and hope he gets back quickly and soon. But let's assume that Ben DiNucci is going to be the starting quarterback of the Cowboys at least this Sunday, and Yeah, not ideal.
Not ideal at all.
But here's what I would say. To me, the bigger concern than Ben DiNucci is that offensive line. Like I don't know what... I guess here's what I would say. For our purposes, what changes are you making? And to me, there's only one that I think... But like, I can't imagine benching Zeke. Like, as bad as that offense...
As much as you'd like to, you're not doing it.
You're rolling Zeke out there, and you're just like, oh, God, please fall in the end zone or something.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully some of their linemen get healthy. And then I think it's tough to bench Amari Cooper. Like, yeah, I mean,
you can't, right? Exactly.
So I just sort of feel like... So maybe CeeDee Lamb?
Maybe. He had, what, one rushing yard yesterday? That's it?
Yeah. No, CeeDee Lamb, yeah. I mean, like, so...
I think he had literally one rushing yard yesterday.
So, obviously, it was an awful game for the entire Cowboys offense. Washington's defense is not bad at all, especially their defensive line. So, that's all I would say is that I think in terms of moves you would make, like, you already weren't starting Michael Gallup. Dalton Schultz was a, like, oh, you know, you're desperate at tight end kind of play. So, really, to me, the only... Like, you're going to lower expectations for Zeke and Cooper, but you're already starting them. You're not starting Ben DiNucci until you see something. And so it's really about CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb becomes kind of a flex consideration. It depends on what other options you have. And you'll tune in Sunday morning, Fantasy Football Now, and you'll see Field and I do flex appeal, and then you'll figure it out. There you go. Bingo, bango, we're done.
Well done there. Let's keep it moving here to Seattle, where last night, a crazy game, as Matthew mentioned. The Seahawks fall, their first defeat of the season, Stefania, 37-34 to Arizona. But big news on the running back front as Chris Carson also left this game.
Yeah, Chris Carson with a foot injury that took him out in the third quarter. And originally he was questionable to return, but he never did come back. Afterwards, Pete Carroll said he had a midfoot sprain, but he was waiting word on the severity. And here's one thing I would say to be cautious of, even if we hear that it wasn't severe. These injuries are so tough to recover from, even when they're mild. There are guys who've come back thinking it's not a big deal, or the imaging doesn't show it to be a big deal. But if there's any kind of subtle instability when they try and run again, they tend to have issues. So we may not know how much this will impact Chris Carson until he's at least cleared to the point of trying to practice. Because I believe it was Evan Engram who had an injury like this and tried to come back and tried to push and just couldn't. Because ultimately the injury turned out to be more significant functionally, even though on imaging it didn't look that bad. Cam Newton is another one who had a midfoot sprain that was considered to be not a big deal. They thought he'd be back in a couple of weeks. Ended up ending his season. I'm not, you know, portending gloom and doom necessarily for Chris Carson. I'm just saying that no matter what you hear about the imaging results early on, especially if they're considered not to be significant, it doesn't necessarily translate to how it's going to impact him on the field.
I think that's really important, Stefania. I think that's very, very strong and important context. Just for whatever it's worth, like literally as you were talking, got an alert. And it's a tweet from Bob Condotta, who does a great job covering Seattle. And Bob tweets, quote, "My understanding is Chris Carson's injury is not considered to be significant." But again, to Stefania's point about, hey, just because it's not considered to be significant doesn't mean he won't miss some time. It's interesting field because Chris Carson has this injury-prone label. He is a free agent after this year. He's not somebody that signed a big deal. I believe he was a seventh-round draft pick. He's not on a lucrative deal. Like, his hope is to cash in after this season. And certainly he'll be signed to a more lucrative deal than the one he's on now. But it's important for him, to get out there as soon as he can. But, I mean, Stefania says, like, we've seen this before. So wait and see. And obviously, I would assume Carlos Hyde is high on your waiver wire column.
There's a case for him as the ad of the week, especially if we get more context surrounding the timeline on Chris Carson. Last night, Carlos Hyde ran 15 times for a total of 68 yards with a touchdown. He also caught 3 passes. We're a year removed from Carlos Hyde having over 1,000 rushing yards. Yeah, he's a plug-and-play starter if Chris Carson misses time. Same game, Stefania. Same position. Kenyon Drake also banged up.
Yeah, also with a foot injury, he ends up, he ends up being carted off. It was very sad. He was clearly in a lot of pain. And I would like to remind you that this is a young man who has suffered
The DAC injury, right?
He was my comparison, in fact, to prove that Dak could come back and be better than ever because he had that ankle fracture dislocation while he was at Alabama. He also had the Thomas Davis injury before Thomas Davis did, which was the fractured forearm. They put a hardware and plates in, and he played very quickly afterwards. So my point is, he's had serious injury. He knows what serious injury is, and he appeared to be in a lot of discomfort. Initial reports from Adam Schefter that the fractures came, it's Monday. The x-rays came back negative, but that does not tell the whole story when it comes to severity in these lower extremity injuries. So more tests forthcoming for him today.
And by the way, they have a bye next week, so they have a little bit more time than any other running back trying to heal up right now. Chase Edmonds filled in last night. Actually, not filled in because this happened in the fourth quarter, but he was playing, as it were, alongside Kenyon Drake and got a little bit more run as this game went to overtime. Over 21 fantasy points for Chase Edmonds. Does not qualify for the waiver wire column because he's already been added in a bunch of leagues, but go take a look. He's still available in some 40-odd percent of leagues on ESPN.com.
I'll say this very quickly. If Chase Edmonds gets this job, he ain't giving it back. Chase Edmonds is better than Kenyon Drake. I've been saying it all year, and you guys saw it last night.
Chase Edmonds, potential league winner with that kind of upside. Let's move forward to a few injuries, Stefania. Maybe not as significant in terms of the names or the severity. Let's start in Denver, though, as a couple of banged up skill players for them on offense.
So Philip Lindsay, right? Looks really good coming back from the toe injury first half. I think he had 9 carries for 79 yards and then leaves in the second half with a concussion. Tim Patrick, who's been an excellent wide receiver for them, ends up leaving the fourth quarter with a hamstring injury. So Denver gets Philip Lindsay back recently and gets Noah Fant back and ends up losing Philip Lindsay and Tim Patrick to injury last night. And then, of course, it wouldn't be an injury update without reporting on my 49ers, who had an amazing win in New England last night, but it came at a price. And Jeff Wilson, who had a calf issue and was questionable coming into the game, has a phenomenal performance. And then at the end, has an injury where he's clearly in a lot of discomfort. They are concerned that it is a high ankle sprain for him. Jeremy Fowler reporting this morning that x-rays were negative. But again, x-rays, particularly taken at the stadium, not necessarily telling the whole picture. So more tests for Jeff Wilson. And Deebo Samuel, obviously we've been waiting for him because he was out for the first part of the season, recovering still from the Jones fracture and surgery that he had. And he's been a bright spot for them. Hamstring injury last night, Kyle Shanahan already saying he's going to miss some time. Obviously, we don't know what some time stands for, but whenever you have a guy who's coming off a major low extremity surgery and then has a subsequent soft tissue injury, you know you have to be cautious with that, and the 49ers will be. And then Diontae Johnson, who comes back after missing last week with a back contusion. Remember, when he was injured in week five, Mike Tomlin said that he thought it wouldn't be a big deal, that he'd be back. They really didn't anticipate him missing, and then he missed. Well, now, last night, he ends up having a strong performance as well in his return, but he leaves injured. His injury, an ankle injury. Now, Brooke Pryor, who covers the team for us, said that he called it, quote, just a bruise and expects to play in week 8. So we will see if Diontae Johnson's own prediction about his injury holds up.
Can't wait for Steelers and Ravens on Sunday. Let's move forward to an injury that just won't go away, Stefania. We talked about this extensively on Fantasy Football Now. Michael Thomas, for those that haven't heard, has yet to play since injuring his ankle in week 1, and now he's dealing with multiple injuries. Can we expect him back on the field in week 8?
I don't think we can guarantee it. I think we can hope for it, but there's no report from the Saints as far as how serious this hamstring injury is, which is the latest issue that's plaguing him. We finally thought we were getting him back from the high ankle sprain. You recall he was suspended after punching a teammate, then back in practice this week, and he leaves practice early on Wednesday. Turns out, hamstring injury sustained this week. It could cost him another week. We just don't know yet.
Man, how about Emmanuel Sanders before we get to the Thomas conversation? Emmanuel Sanders placed on the COVID list with a positive test on Thursday, Stefania. Maybe it was Friday, excuse me. Does that guarantee he's out for week 8?
It's really, you know, the paths are very different. There's quite a spider web of algorithms there. But once you test positive for COVID-19, you are indeed positive for the virus. The athlete has to be clear of symptoms and they have to go through subsequent testing. It really depends on what their symptom course is. So I don't want to speculate right now, but we should hear more. The team will report the updates.
Okay, so we could maybe not have Emmanuel Sanders or Michael Thomas in week 8. Just quickly on the COVID stuff. Get well, Reichwell Armstead, man. We're all thinking about you. You are, I know you're going through a lot right now for the Jags running back who we thought had a chance to replace Leonard Fournette. He's been dealing with COVID-19, and read up on what he's going through via Adam Schefter yesterday.
I think it's really important to emphasize that, you know, we hear about so many players being put on these lists because in addition to the players who test positive, like in the case of Emmanuel Sanders, there might be somebody else who is deemed a close contact. We saw that happen with the Raiders where Trent Brown tests positive, but the other O-linemen who were close contacts are put on the list. So I think we just assume, oh, these guys, they're going to go through it and come back. We've seen players like Cam Newton who didn't exhibit really any strong symptoms, but it doesn't mean that it's not a serious illness and that there are certain people who will have different courses, just like all of us. You know, everybody has a different health history coming into it. And Reichwell Armstead, I think his case serves as a reminder to hospitalizations and missing the rest of the season that we cannot assume that it will just be an easy course because we're dealing with athletes.
Well, get luck to him. No question about that. Let's go to Green Bay, Stefania. The Packers get another win yesterday, actually in Houston over the Texans. They're now 5-1, and they did so without their star running back.
Yeah, I think we talked about this on Sunday before the show, saying, you know, you could take a chapter out of the Davante Adams playbook where he felt like he was ready to go and the team held him out. And Aaron Jones, he actually spoke to reporters on Friday and he laid the groundwork for the fact that even though this was considered a mild calf strain, something that he sustained late in the week in practice, and he thought he might be able to play, he was entrusting the decision to the medical staff there and looking at the big picture. So they held him out this week. I think really it depends on how he feels and how he performs in practice this week, but hopefully it was just a 1 week absence.
I hope so as well. He certainly seemed to suggest that it was going to be a short-term thing for him, and they have already had their bye week, so Green Bay certainly could use him for the long haul going forward. Joe Mixon did not practice at all last week, Stefania, and Giovanni Bernard stepped in admirably for him.
And it might be, again, you know, we didn't get any details from Cincinnati on this foot injury that Joe Mixon suffered, but it was pretty apparent when he didn't even return to the practice field at all, not any attempt during last week. So as a result, we don't really have any information as to how he's faring with that foot. But the hint around Cincinnati seemed to be that this could cost him some time.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye out on that one. Giovanni Bernard had 20.6 fantasy points yesterday, filling in for Joe Mixon. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about as it pertains to other running backs. But first, a couple of words from some friends. From the moment they're born, you do everything to keep your kids safe. But who's looking out for you as you look out for them? The Volvo XC90 SUV with advanced safety technology helps look after you. From the standard blind spot information system that watches your sides and can steer you away from merging traffic, to standard cross-traffic alert with auto brake that watches your back and can automatically apply the brakes for people in oncoming traffic as you reverse. It's nice to know that someone is looking out for you, the XC90, for everyone's safety. Visit volvocars.com/US to learn more.
If you're missing the fun of the ballpark right now, you're not alone. But just because you can't be in the stadium doesn't mean you can't bring that classic ballpark feeling home with you. The best way to do that is with Ballpark Buns and Rolls. Ballpark and the ballpark go together like baseball in summer, right? They're America's pastime and America's favorite buns and rolls, an essential part of celebrations both big and small. There's nothing worse than your bun breaking under all that pressure. So guess what? Ballpark buns and rolls never fall apart. They're always freshly baked, always soft, and always delicious. Ballpark buns and rolls are a great way to get a carefree taste of summer any time of year. Whether shared at a backyard barbecue, a fall tailgate, or any manner of celebration year-round, you can't help but enjoy yourself when enjoying a ballpark bun creation. So next time you're picking up essentials for grilling, tailgating, maybe a little slow cooker action, or a nostalgic night in, make sure you grab ballpark buns and rolls. Find them wherever you grocery shop.
I said earlier when we were talking about Odell Beckham Jr., there was a good chance that by the time you are listening to this podcast in audio form, we'd have an update. Well, for those of you that are watching it live here on the video form, we have an update. As Odell Beckham Jr. has texted Josina Anderson, NFL reporter, that he has torn his ACL and his season is now officially over. Looked bad. Stefania laid it out that sort of had some suggestions of an ACL tear. Odell Beckham Jr., officially done for 2020. We wish him well in his recovery. A guy that, say what you will about how things have gone so far on the field, he's a worker. He's an incredibly talented player and someone that had helped this team to 5-2. And
there's no question.
Feel bad for Odell, the way that things have shook out. But he'll be back, hopefully stronger than ever, in 2021. Let's talk about some of the running backs yesterday and maybe whether we learned something or not. Remember, DeAndre Swift is awesome for the Lions in Week 6. Had a huge game with 2 touchdowns and over 120 rushing yards. We still saw some more awesome yesterday with another 27 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown plus 4 catches on 5 targets, but not as much volume, Matthew. Are we at least getting there with DeAndre Swift? Were you encouraged by anything you saw yesterday or more discouraged because Adrian Peterson is still a thing?
Both. Okay. Both encouraged because, like, DeAndre Swift once again looked like, oh, yeah, that's the guy we were excited to see in the pros coming out of college. Yeah. You know, and, like, he looks as advertised. You know, he was injured in the preseason. We didn't get, and obviously there are no preseason games, so he didn't really get a chance to look at him. Tough first game with the drop touchdown at the end of the game. But again, like yesterday, he looked like the real deal. So encouraged by that. Discouraged by the fact that, yeah, Adrian Peterson isn't going away. And I believe it was Matt Patricia. I apologize if it was Matt Patricia or Bob Quinn. But I think it was Matt Patricia who came out and said, like, I know this is going to disappoint fantasy folks, but we like having multiple running backs. This is, I believe it was an interview in the Detroit Free Press that I saw.
Might have been Daryl Bevel, right?
Could have been Daryl Bevel. Yeah, anyway, I apologize. I'm bungling that. But the fact is it doesn't really matter because we saw that. What do you got?
So, like, I don't disagree with that statement, and I tweeted something out yesterday about this. Like, it's fine if they want to use this as a committee, right?
Yeah.
It's just that DeAndre Swift should be the one and Adrian Peterson should be the guy behind him. I don't feel like Peterson got 11 carries yesterday. DeAndre Swift got 9. In no circumstance, after everything that we've seen from DeAndre Swift this year, should he be getting less carries than a less explosive Adrian Peterson?
So a couple things
right.
here.
But he also got
9 more snaps.
He did.
Good, right?
Yep.
9 more snaps in Peterson.
Yep.
So at least he played the most out of all these
players.
And
he had more targets for sure than AP.
5 targets.
For
yeah.
sure.
By the way, also not the best game script for DeAndre Swift yesterday. This was a pretty close game. And Kerryon Johnson, I actually saw this tweet from TJ Lang and former Lions offensive lineman and several others who shared this thought is
yep.
that Kerryon Johnson's like a 6 offensive lineman as a pass protector. And I know we hate that for fantasy football, but the guys in the huddle love that. And you know who else loves that? Matthew Stafford. And they won, as someone suggested they would. No, guaranteed they would on this podcast recently. So anyways, I think we're getting there, though. I think we're getting there.
We are getting there. And so if you're asking me, am I buying or selling DeAndre Swift, I am buying DeAndre Swift. But I don't know that I think best case scenario for him is like a lower end RB2 as long as Adrian Peterson is there.
Because
I don't think they will commit to him fully. But I do think given that defense in Detroit, there will be better game scripts for DeAndre Swift where they're trailing more than they were yesterday because they were certainly competitive. It's a big win for you guys. That's the kind of game that you guys normally lose.
Seriously.
Well, it's the kind of game that the Falcons and the Lions normally
yeah.
lose.
So one of those had to give.
Perfectly. Right. Yes.
Really,
I was waiting for the tie to happen. How about nobody goes home happy?
Well, and it's unbelievable, too, because, by the way, and I feel so bad for, and I like Todd Gurley. Like, I'm a Todd Gurley fan, right? But I feel so terrible because you remember, a couple years ago, Todd Gurley was having one of those monster fantasy seasons he had. And I forget what week it is, but Gurley took a knee.
Yeah.
Todd Gurley took a knee to preserve the win. And I remember we did a whole thing on the fantasy show where I did a whole rant saying, you're not allowed to complain. I think this is 2018. You're not allowed to complain about Todd Gurley. You know what I mean? Because some of us drafted Le'Veon Bell and have gotten nothing from him. You've gotten 18 touchdowns from Todd Gurley. You're not allowed to complain because he kneeled down and didn't get you a second in that game. But here, so he leaves L.A. He did
Love
it perfectly
it.
When he was a member of the Rams.
Yeah.
He goes to Atlanta and he screws it up. And wanders into the end zone when he didn't want to.
And you know what happens? We get extra fantasy points for that touchdown, plus
yes.
all the fantasy points for Matthew Stafford and
yes.
TJ Hockenson
Correct.
And Kenny Galladay. It's a better move for the entire game.
It was an amazing fantasy move for everyone. It was just a heartbreaking one for the Falcons. Just
the
when
Falcons.
You think they can't have their hearts broken anymore, they find a new way to do it. I feel so awful.
Yeah.
I feel so awful for Falcons fans. It's tough.
It's rough. To be honest with you,
yeah.
they're better served going like 1-15.
They are.
Yeah.
They obviously
like, big
are.
Picture, like,
I know, but it's yeah, just, you know, picture. Like, yeah.
It hurts, though. Bummer. In the moment, it never does hurt.
Listen,
well, I'm monitoring the Lions this week as a potential upset pick over the Colts. I haven't made my decision yet, but I'm monitoring that.
Please keep us posted.
Let's keep
Daniel Dopp and I will wait on pins and needles. Yeah, let us know.
Well, I've nailed the pick twice, so might as well keep it going. Sure. Le'Veon Bell made his debut for the Chiefs yesterday. He played exactly 1/3 of the offensive snaps in a really weird game. Mahomes, I think, accounted for one total touchdown, and they still blow out the Broncos. They score on offense, they score on defense, they score on special teams yesterday. Byron Pringle, of course, with a 100-plus yard kickoff return for a touchdown. Dan Sorensen with an interception return for a pick six.
Yep.
Le'Veon Bell, 6 carries, 39 yards, 0 targets. I don't, Matthew, I don't have a take from yesterday.
I do.
Okay, go for it.
I do. Listen,
really?
By the way, and I would not say that too loudly. I'm not allowed. Are we allowed to work at ESPN without takes? I don't think we are.
Yeah, sure.
Any of our bosses listening, Field has a take. Hey, I'm going to do this one. Okay, I'm protecting your job.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Anyway, bad producing by you, Daniel.
Yeah, I know that's my
never
fault.
Let somebody say that.
Never
have a take
let
on
someone
ESPN,
say I don't have
on
a take
an ESPN
on this.
Platform. All right, here's the thing. I have a take. I thought Le'Veon Bell looked good. Listen, you know me. I am not a Le'Veon Bell fan.
Right.
And I understand a small sample size.
He looked okay.
I thought he had a little bit of burst. I thought it looked like he fits into this offense. And it made me, I want to double down on what I said previously, which is that 10 touches in the Kansas City Chiefs offense are going to be more fantasy productive than 20 with the Jets. That I believe he will be fantasy relevant. I believe he will be a top 30 fantasy running back from here on out.
If those touches are catches, if 3 of those touches are catches, yes. But if not, no.
Again, it was such a super weird game. Like, Patrick Mahomes didn't throw a lot in this game at all.
Right. That's why I don't take it. Is it like we didn't see it, right? Like, yeah, he had one nice long run and then 5 sort of ho-hum runs. Like, whatever.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
The next 2 games are the Jets and Carolina.
Those count, yeah.
I mean, yeah. If you're talking about a game script in which maybe Le'Veon Bell, if they get up big, if those games turn out to, like, he could easily, especially revenge game against the Jets. Can we just start that narrative now?
Sure.
It is a revenge game next week.
It is. Hashtag
2
revenge
weeks.
Game.
Next week? Oh, that's right. Next week.
Next
and
week.
The Chiefs
next
are
week.
Only favored by 21 points.
Yeah.
Only.
Anyways, let's keep it right. I really believe the Le'Veon conversation picks up in earnest down the line. I didn't personally learn a lot. I think you said, yeah, he looks good, but
I thought he looked good, and I thought the fact that he got basically that if again super small sample size, obviously in a weird game, but I
really believe
in his first
four
game he got
a
third. That's fine, but I believe he will get that.
Okay.
Like he in his first game. He got a third of the running back carries.
Yeah, I'm just
touches. You know what I mean? Like, and if you're
third
telling
of the snaps,
me,
third of the snaps. Yeah,
third of the snaps.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, okay, if you're telling me Le'Veon Bell gets a third of the snaps in the Kansas City Chiefs offense,
right?
As long as Patrick Mahomes is that quarterback, that has fantasy value.
That's the thing for
also
me.
Also, with like Chad Henne playing quarterback for part of that time too, right? Like,
yeah.
I'll learn more in subsequent weeks.
I can't believe I'm the one defending Le'Veon Bell here, but yeah, I think Le'Veon Bell will be a top. I'm saying it now. I think he's a top 30 running back the rest of the way.
Top 30-ish. 30, Ronald Jones should be like a top 20 running back for the rest of the way, but then Bruce Arians does what he does, right? Which is that he's fickle with running backs. And again, the Bucs are 5-2. They look like a legit Super Bowl contender. I don't have anything against the idea of being fickle with your running backs in real football. For fantasy, it makes things kind of tough. Yesterday, Ronald Jones finished with a rushing touchdown plus 34 rushing yards, but he plays 9 fewer snaps than Leonard Fournette in a game that for a lot of it was close. This is not like they were just blowing him out all of a sudden, you know, Leonard Fournette picks up the garbage time. Fournette had 50 rushing yards plus 6 catches on 7 targets. Are we back to the mind-numbing Buccaneers backfield?
We might be. I mean, that's a little bit concerning. Like, I wonder how much of it was just like, hey, let's get him out there. We got to get him, you know, going and part of this offense because he came to camp late, obviously, after he was released by Jacksonville and then he was injured. And so maybe it's like, you know, he was starting to run well and they just want to integrate him into the offense. I will say, Ronald Jones isn't going to go away. It's not like Leonard Fournette is ever going to have this job to himself, assuming Ronald Jones is healthy.
But I think the point is that
yes,
neither one of them is ever going to have this job to himself.
I know. That's the concern.
We got to ride the gravy train for 3 weeks there without Leonard Fournette, and maybe that gravy train has run dry.
Maybe, but if history has shown anything with Leonard Fournette, there's a chance that the gravy train comes back for Ronald Jones. Right. But at the moment, yes, it would appear to be a running back by committee. Having said that, they're both running well, and if that offense is going to score like it's scoring and it feels like it's going to, like, it's pretty interesting. I think the Buccaneers, especially once Antonio Brown shows up, are just going to be an absolute disaster for us, for people who do what we do and trying to analyze them other than Tom Brady. You're like, okay, start Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And I think Rob Gronkowski's back, right? Obviously, you're starting Rob Gronkowski given the tight end position. But after that, you're just sort of like, I hope it's a Mike Evans week. I hope it's a Chris Godwin week. I mean, I don't know what you do about Mike Evans, right?
We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Let's keep it going, though, for a couple more of these backfields. Justin Jackson yesterday had just 12 rushing yards. 5 catches, though, for 43 yards. Good enough for 10.5 fantasy points. Played 6 fewer snaps than Joshua Kelly, who ran pretty well yesterday.
Yeah.
Not that he's explosive as a running back right now. Joshua Kelly is averaging 2 yards per carry over his last 3 games, but he's getting the football a decent amount. This all, of course, ties into Austin Eckler. Last I heard, Stefania, the phrasing from Anthony Lynn was later rather than sooner on Austin Eckler's return. Any sense on that?
He also said he was dealing with very serious issues. Those were his words. Remember, he was injured in week 4. We've talked about the mechanism, the sort of jackknife position, really elongating his hamstring, stretching it, a severe hamstring injury. That's the bottom line. And this is the kind of thing where you don't want it to end up getting worse, having him come back too soon. If he has a significant tear, you don't want it to become so severe by him aggravating it that he would be in position to require surgery. So that's why you bring this guy back slowly. He's eligible to return off of IR in week 8, but there's no way that's happening. They, at the outset, declared it a 4 to 6 week injury. And when you hear later rather than sooner, I mean, to me, you're talking 6 to 8 weeks potentially. But he's not anywhere near the practice field yet.
Okay. Well, then it's going to be the Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson show, and I think it's going to be okay. I think some of us are going to be fine, but I think for the most part, these are two guys who are better suited as flexes than RB2s.
I would agree with that. I think it's worth noting that Justin Jackson was dealing with a knee injury. Like, they weren't sure if he was going to play. He ended up playing, obviously, but you know, they elevated a guy off the practice squad, Troy Maine Pope, off the practice squad on Saturday, and so that may have contributed to Jackson getting a few less touches than he maybe normally would have, and Kelly getting more work there. It is worth noting they do seem to like Jackson in the passing game. He's got 5 catches now in consecutive games, and that's significant when Justin Herbert is your quarterback. Justin Herbert is some kind of special.
Yes, he is. He is all sorts of special.
Yeah, and that little noise you heard, that was Stefania, because Stefania has him in our Dynasty League.
Nice job, Stefania.
I used him to beat you.
Yes, she did. She beat me like a drum. I was crushing her, and then she Justin Herbert me. And I was just like, all right, well, that was fun.
So Devin Singletary has a good set of matchups over the next 3 weeks. The Patriots and the Seahawks and the Cardinals. On paper, I want to hold out hope that he can make good on those matchups. Mm. But then I look at what he's done over the past 4 games, 3 yards per carry. Over his last 3 games, he's got fewer than 7 fantasy points. Matthew, is it even worth trying to make Devin Singletary a thing going forward, or have we passed that point?
I think we're past that point. He's one of those guys that, like, I need to see it before I'm putting him back in my lineup.
Yeah.
What in the Bills offense gives you any sort of confidence now? Josh Allen's one of those things where hang on, though. Seriously, like 3 weeks ago, you're like, all right, well, it's a Tuesday night game against Tennessee, and schedule was weird, and like, okay, fine, you can sort of write that one off. And then they play the Chiefs, and you're like, all right, once again, it's like, again, the schedule was sort of weird there, and it was bad weather, and the Chiefs are a tough defense, and okay, fine, you can write that off. But this was a normal week of practice against the Jets.
What do you got against the Jets?
Wrong with the Jets?
They're bad. They're bad. They're a bad defense, and Josh Allen lit them up early in the season, and they were awful yesterday. Like, they couldn't, like, they ended up winning the game on the foot of Tyler Bass, but like, come on, like, they couldn't convert anything in the red zone, and like, you still have to start Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, I guess, or maybe Cole Beasley, you know, superstar Cole Beasley. But honestly, like,
you laugh.
That was no Cole Beasley, legit. No, I mean, but I'm just saying, like, that was awful. That was an ugly, ugly win, and I would be panicking if I was invested in the Bills' offense.
Big few weeks ahead. The Bills could potentially, over the next 3 weeks,
yeah.
I mean, they certainly could beat the Patriots, obviously. That's a different team.
Sure.
But would you be, if they don't beat the Patriots, they could easily be 5-5.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have Seattle and Arizona. That Arizona game is in Arizona. So something to monitor. This AFC East is not as bad as the NFC East, obviously.
Right.
But I wouldn't be stunned with like a 9-7 AFC East champion. Would not be stunned.
I wouldn't either. And I'll say something even crazier. Right now, I still think the Bills are the favorite. But if Tua's anything, don't be surprised if the Dolphins, if the Bills keep doing what they're doing and Tua is anything at all.
How's this?
The Dolphins are in the mix.
How's this? After the Patriots game, Seattle, Arizona bye, Chargers with Justin Herbert at San Francisco, home to Pittsburgh.
That's a tough
sledding right there. We're going to learn a lot about the Bills over these next sledding. 6 or 7 weeks. All right, let's get to more running back concerns.
Would you trade Josh Allen? Would you try to trade Josh Allen or Stephon Diggs, given the schedule we just talked about and the struggles we've seen over the last 3 weeks?
You know, it's really hard to orchestrate a quarterback trade right now because we have like 12 to 14 really good options.
Yep.
Most people in your league, like if you have Josh Allen, you're probably like, I'm fine with it. And if you don't, you probably have somebody else. Like it's a really tough year to try to trade quarterbacks.
I would agree with
that. Hard time, hard way myself. Here's the good news on Zeke Elliott. He didn't fumble. I mean, not that he lost. He fumbled. He just, it was recovered by one of his teammates. So Zeke, 45 rushing yards, one catch, 6 yards. Man, Matthew, alive. It's been brutal. The offensive line has just been awful. They're not getting any better with Tyron Smith out for the year, with Lyle Collins out for the year. Travis Frederick watching games from home after he retired this offseason. Offensive line is just woeful right now. What's the hope for Zeke? I mean, if you were to reassess Zeke's value right now, is he a low-end RB1? Is he an RB2? Like, God, I mean, you have to keep starting him. And the guy we're going to talk about right next, which is Josh Jacobs. But, man alive, what do you do?
I think he's still an RB1, but he's a low-end RB1. I'm trying to think of, like, if we drafted again today, even knowing everything we do, are there 12 running backs that go ahead of Ezekiel Elliott?
No, not 12, but there might be 7 or 8.
Right, so he's a low-end RB1.
Right, so I think, I don't want to go through them all, but, you know, Kamara, Henry, Aaron Jones, maybe Kareem Hunt.
Dalvin Cook. Right.
Anyways, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I don't know that CEH probably goes ahead of him.
Yeah. Chris Carson, if you were healthy.
Right.
Maybe Kareem Hunt, as I just mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, who knows with Mixon.
Miles Gaskin.
Like, right. I mean, like, but that's
what
I'm saying.
You laugh.
Oh, Miles Gaskin can play. Yeah. Miles Gaskin can absolutely play. But I guess that's my point is, like, I think just the guaranteed volume that you're going to get for Zeke. He is a good pass catcher, even though we haven't seen it. Like, you know, we just don't know what this offense is going to look like under DiNucci or Dalton. You know, obviously McCaffrey, like whatever, or the Carolina running back. Although Mike Davis all of a sudden has hit a wall like the last 2 weeks. But yeah, you know what I mean. So I think he's probably like somewhere in that 8 to 12 range in terms of running back. You still have to roll him out there, but obviously, this is not the Zeke you drafted or expected.
Is there any chance that you would look at this as a potential buy low opportunity on Zeke? And I understand that, like, you don't know if it's going to get any better. It's kind of like a shot, but, you know, can it get much worse than what it's seemingly been over the last 2 weeks?
I mean, so
the next time someone presents me a bad opportunity to buy low on a guy who's carrying the ball, getting 20-ish touches a game, would be the first. Right? Like, I'm
that's
always in
exactly
on that, right. Like, I'm always in on that.
Because I mean, at Philadelphia, home to Pittsburgh, you don't love that. Then there's a bye, and at Minnesota, that's the next four. So,
but I'm not even worried about the schedule anymore. It's not that. It's just that if he's going to get 20-ish touches per game, I'm going to be fine with it.
I'm going to hope for a dink and down offense, someone that, you know, quarterback looking for a safety valve, and Zeke is that guy.
Josh Jacobs, again, not a ton of analysis here. 17 rushing yards, 3 catches on 4 targets for 14 yards. He made the hate list this past week. Great call by Matthew. I think you had him outside your top 10.
I did.
And he was just not good. And the offensive line, obviously, was severely limited in terms of practice time together this past week. Even coming off of their bye, the Bucs' defensive front is very, very good. Better days are ahead for Josh Jacobs. That was just one that was ripe for the picking to be a bad day. And you just mentioned Mike Davis, who sort of hit a wall, 12 rushing yards yesterday, but he did have 5 catches on 5 targets for 24 yards, 8.6 fantasy points. They play on Thursday night. And Stefania, could we possibly see the king of fantasy football, Christian McCaffrey?
Well, we hear he has a shot, a chance, if you will. But if you think about how they've managed him so far, been pretty conservative. This was a high ankle sprain that McCaffrey suffered in week 2. Remember how he was going to try and beat the timeline? And there's no doubt that he's worked as hard as anyone to come back from an injury. You know how Christian McCaffrey's work ethic goes. But this is feeling like a 6-week affair. And with a game Thursday night, be just shy of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being pushed to the November 8th game.
Let me ask you a question. I was just thinking out loud because he did not return to practice yet. I'm just using logic here. The Panthers are really not going to practice for the next 2 days. They're going to walk through. I'd be surprised if they even had, you know, the shells on. This will probably just be helmets and shorts.
Correct.
You're really going to bring a guy back from a high ankle sprain during a week in which the extent of your practice is like looking at cards? It feels to me unlikely.
You're absolutely right. But there's one thing I've learned by doing this for a long time. I avoid the words always and never. Okay. Because every time I think that there's a logical reason why X or Y wouldn't happen, somebody does something different. And I 100% agree with you because that would also fit with not only the nature of the injury that he's had and them wanting him to test it in football prep situations, if you will. It's the closest they can get to before a game. It would not make sense to run him out there. But then there's school of thought that maybe they've seen enough on the side and they just want to give him a little taste of being back out in the field and actually going behind Mike Davis. You never know. But to me, it feels like we're going to be waiting until next week.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that one.
By the way, after the Thursday night game, they're at Kansas City. So obviously that's a big game. You want to make sure you'd have Christian McCaffrey for a game at Arrowhead.
That'll be fun.
Then home to Tampa Bay and home to Detroit. So a couple of interesting games that are coming up for the Panthers.
Some surprise pass catchers in just a moment that we will get to. But first, Shell knows that between every tee up, lay up, and batter up that you can't wait to catch up with your favorite podcast. So come to Shell and get three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus to help keep your engine running like new. Then save up with the Fuel Rewards program and never pay full price for gas again. And finally, snack up with in-store rewards to save even more at the pump. Oh, time to wrap it up. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell. And engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, see full terms and conditions at fuelrewards.com.
How do you banish high rates on car insurance, Phil?
No idea.
No idea? You switch to Geico during Geico-ween.
That was frustration getting out right there.
Field, October is Geico's favorite time of year. I'm frustrated because you don't know that. The folks over at Geico have been working even harder than ever to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for you and your family, Cisco and Chapin Field. Switching to Geico isn't so scary, especially when they could be brewing up spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote today at geico.com and see just how much you could save. No eye of newt needed. Happy Geico-ween, everybody.
Well done, Daniel. Let's get to some pass-catching surprises from yesterday and whether we believe these players have a chance to sustain it going forward. We already mentioned Harrison Bryant earlier on in the show. Matthew mentioned maybe he gets a little bit more run as the Browns deal with no Odell Beckham Jr. But Stefania, his role is also dependent upon Austin Hooper, who had an appendectomy this past week.
Yes, he did. And, well, you know, theoretically, I mean, some athletes return fairly quickly. I suppose there's a possibility he could come back in week 8. The Browns have a bye in week 9, and just think about healing time. It would make sense that he would come back after the bye.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on whether Austin Hooper returns after the bye. Again, that sounds like a lot of pain. And the Harrison Bryant, though, is a good story. He was the Mackey Award winner, which is the nation's best tight end last season during his final year at FAU, Florida Atlantic University. We just mentioned him. How about Cole Beasley, who Matthew mentioned just a moment ago? And no kidding, he's on pace right now for 90 catches and 1,075 yards. That's how productive Cole Beasley has been to the first 7 games of the season. He had 9.8 fantasy points in week 1. Since then, he has at least 10 in every game this season, Matthew. It's a thing. It's a real thing.
100 yards or a touchdown in 4 of the last 5. Here's his target count over the last 4 games. He went 4 to 6 to 7 to 12. So, you know, continuing to get more and more involved in this offense. And, you know, some of that may be that, you know, John Brown has been in and out of the offense, but they love him in the slot, and he's clearly got a connection with Josh Allen here, and he's more of a floor play than a ceiling play.
Right, right.
But that has value in fantasy football. And certainly the way that Josh Allen is going and this Bills offense is going, you could do worse than Cole Beasley, no doubt about it.
Yeah, he is certainly a player that has been heavily targeted in that Buffalo offense. Let's keep things moving here with Nelson Agholor, who is one of the better stories of this season. Nelson Agholor was signed to a 1-year minimum money contract. Obviously had a very difficult tenure during his time in Philadelphia. He got a second chance in Las Vegas. And yesterday he had 5 catches for 107 yards and a touchdown. At one point, and I forget who initially had this stat, there was a time where he was the only wide receiver in the NFL who, when quarterbacks were targeting him, had a perfect passer rating. Now, that's one of those sort of funky stats that I'm not sure exactly how much it means, but awesome to see him be better again yesterday than he was throughout much of his time in Philadelphia. 21.7 fantasy points, back-to-back-to-back good games for Nelson Agholor, Matthew. Are you ready? Are you ready to make this a real thing, or are you a little bit hesitant?
I wouldn't mind picking him up. I will say this. I think the Raiders' offense is better than they get credit for.
Okay, that's fair.
You know what I mean? Like, I think, look, yeah. I think Derek Carr has played better. By the way, if you look at Derek Carr's numbers, like, Derek Carr's been a legitimate fantasy quarterback now for a while. And so, you know, he's got, like, I want to say, off the top of my head, I want to say, you know, he's got at least four games with 20 fantasy points or more. And so, like, I'm not saying Derek Carr is great, but I'm saying that Derek Carr's been better than I think general perception is, and I think he's better in fantasy than general perception is around him. And so, with Henry Ruggs being in and out of the lineup, like, feels like they've sort of settled in on a, you know, so it's Ruggs and it's Agholor and it's Darren Waller and they've got Hunter Renfrow, and all of a sudden you're like, and they're throwing a lot, and we talked about the struggles of Josh Jacobs. And so with teams being able to put on, because their defense has not been terrific, it's been better than I think probably advertised, but it's still not great. And so they're having to throw more than I think they would like to. But when they're throwing to Nelson Agholor, who, but, you know, I think if you think about Nelson Agholor for a second, he was a guy that came in with a lot of hype, had a bad rookie season, and people were ready to bail on him. Then he became good in Philadelphia. Like, he had a couple of seasons there and then fell out of favor there, had the bad drop, and then, you know, and so kind of a new, you know, moving on, new scenario here. I do think there's talent with Nelson Agholor. I'm willing to buy this a little bit. I'm willing to take a speculative flyer and pick him up if I need wide receiver help.
Fair enough. Let's get one more here. I really want to get to the wide receivers who struggled yesterday. Just quickly want to note that Scotty Miller had his best game of the season. 6 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown. Just an absolutely gorgeous throw by Tom Brady. I tell you what, though, I'm having a hard time convincing myself to pick him up this week, and here's the very obvious reason why. He's got one more week until Antonio Brown arrives.
Right.
Right. So if you want to add him for this week only, I get it. But I'm not making him a priority on the waiver wire this week because he has been inconsistent so far this season. And again, Antonio Brown's arrival is going to cost somebody snaps, and you don't think that it would be Mike Evans or Chris Godwin or Rob Gronkowski. Let's get to some of the guys that surprised you in a negative way.
And sure.
Unfortunately, Chase Claypool came back down to earth yesterday. He had 0.8 fantasy points. There were some signs, right?
Right.
He has been in over his head. Mike Clay is the author of the, you know, OTD, opportunities for touchdowns, and he's our guy that always cautions us on regression. You know, he had one game this season, did Claypool, with more than 5 targets, or he has one with more than 5 targets. So you expected him to come back down to earth, but this is what you signed up for, right? This is what you signed up for, is that he may have a 0.8 fantasy point game. He may have a couple more games this year where he finishes with 5 or fewer. But don't you think that we've seen enough from Chase Claypool to feel like more often than not, he's going to pay off, is at the worst, a flex play?
Yeah, I mean, look, did we expect a 4-touchdown game? Of course not. We expected better than, you know, 1 target and, you know, less than 1 fantasy point. We obviously expected that. I mean, look, Deontay Johnson had a huge game, and Juju Smith-Schuster had a huge game here. But, like, do I think he's still going to – do I think that in the Steelers' ideal world, that's their starting 3 wide receivers? I do. I think Claypool and Deontay Johnson on the outside with Juju in the slot. And so, look, he's a talented wide receiver. This happens. You know, and do we think the Steelers' offense can support 3 fantasy-relevant wide receivers? Maybe not. But I'm not willing to bail on Chase Claypool after 1 bad game, especially given that Deontay Johnson once again got hurt late. Claypool can play. Claypool can absolutely play. I got trolled, by the way. I got trolled on Instagram by a Zumba instructor, which doesn't often happen, because I recommended Chase Claypool. I'm like, who in their right mind is not starting Chase Claypool after the last? You know, I'm sorry. Sorry for recommending, like, the hottest wide receiver in football in a great matchup. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just, what are you going to do? Like, I'm not going to apologize for saying, you know, you should probably start Chase Claypool. Although, by the way, I had him, like, in the 20s.
We got it.
All right.
We
got to keep it real.
I have a real quick question, just from a strategy perspective. Understanding we get to a point in the season where draft capital no longer matters, and where you took a player doesn't mean anything. When you have a player that you just either spent a ton of your fab on, or you just use your number 1 or 2 waiver pick for, Does that do anything from a strategy perspective of, I need to see this play out, like even if he has a rough game or two, where because you invested so much and now that waiver priority is gone or all of your fab is gone, or does it not really factor into your decision?
Well,
we'll see.
It does a little bit, just in the sense of, like, because who are you replacing him with?
Right.
Now, if you've wasted that pick or the fab money, then it's unlikely that you're going to be able to go out and get somebody to replace him that has the upside of the guy that you have there. So it depends on your options, obviously.
We're not anywhere close to that point.
No. I was just saying.
We'll cross that bridge when we need to. We got a few other names, though. We really have to get to a
few. I still think Chase Claypool is a wide receiver 3.
I agree there.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure Mike Evans is a wide receiver 3 right now. So I hate to do this. You can't take away a player's touchdowns, but for the sake of argument, if you took away his touchdowns this season, Mike Evans would be literally unplayable. He'd be AJ Green with less production.
Yeah.
In 4 games with Chris Godwin, and typically what happens is that if you have 2 great wide receivers on the field, one of 2 things happens. One of them just goes completely crazy and dominates and is excellent. Or both of them stand to benefit and they both play really well. Neither of those things has been true. In 4 games with Chris Godwin on the field, Mike Evans has 6 total catches. He had 2 catches for 37 yards yesterday. As we referenced on Fantasy Football Now, he's the only player besides Randy Moss to begin his career with 6 straight 1,000-yard seasons. He may not come close to that this year based off how things are playing out. And it's not hurting them. They're 5-2. Tom Brady looks like he's 23. He's unbelievable.
Right.
How much of a concern is this? Are you benching Mike Evans?
It's certainly a concern. I will say there was a play, I watched that game closely, and there was a play where he was streaking down the sidelines and Brady overthrew him. And if Brady hits him in stride, it's a touchdown. It's like a 45, 50-yard touchdown. I'm just saying, like, my point is, I think his day looks
nervous.
Right. His day looks a lot different, and the narrative around Mike Evans is a lot different. And so it was one of the few passes that Brady missed yesterday. But am I concerned? Yeah, of course, especially because, as we talked about, Antonio Brown is coming. And so here's Mike Evans, who so far this season is wide receiver 32 on a per game basis. Like, he's not even a top 30 wide receiver. And if you think he's getting more targets with Antonio Brown showing up, he's not, obviously. I think here's where he is for me. He is no longer a must start, which is unfortunate because where you drafted him, he should be, right? He's no longer a must start. He's a depends on the matchup, depends on who else you have. Like, he's in that, he's a wide receiver. He's in that wide receiver 3 or 4 range, right there on that border. But right, we're 7 weeks into the season. Like, that's the thing. Like, we're halfway through this season, kids. Like, at some point, you kind of go, all right, it is what it is. And I love Mike Evans, one of my favorite players.
Even lower than Mike Evans on the wide receiver board right now is Julian Edelman. Let's keep it simple here, folks. He had 1 catch yesterday for 13 yards. If you have Julian Edelman on your roster, the only way he makes it into your lineup is if it comes after multiple games in a row in which he has earned that spot back in your lineup. The Patriots offense does not look anywhere close to efficient right now.
No.
Cam Newton had a woeful day yesterday. Don't make this difficult on yourselves. Until further notice, you got to bench Julian Edelman.
Can I take that one step further? Until further notice, you're not starting any Patriots player. Name a Patriots player that you would feel confident starting in fantasy right now.
Nobody.
Maybe James White as a flex play.
Yesterday should have been a perfect James White game.
They should have been.
They were getting their butts kicked, and he couldn't throw downfield. That should have been a perfect James White game, and he did nothing in that game yesterday.
So I agree. All of them, until further notice.
Until further notice.
Let's end the show on one more player who I don't want to overthink this one. And DK Metcalf made one of the coolest plays that we've seen in quite some time. He chased down Buda Baker on a play that easily could have been a pick 6 of nearly 90 yards. DK Metcalf chased him down, saves the play. They ended up holding them from scoring any points as Arizona went for it on 4th and goal unsuccessfully. The Cardinals win the game, but still, it's a great... If I were a high school football coach today, a coach at any level, I'm showing that DK Metcalf play. But I digress. DK Metcalf had just 2 catches on 5 targets for 23 yards yesterday. Now, he also had a touchdown called back, and we get it. He's DK Metcalf. I really don't want to overthink this one, Matthew. He's fine. I'm not concerned about DK Metcalf at all. What I want to do here is just take one moment.
I'm tilting because I needed. I had a couple of leagues where I needed Chris Carson and DK Metcalf last night. So
all I'm going to say here is I don't want to deal with the analysis. You're going to still play in DK Metcalf,
of course.
And if you're worried, trade him to me. I'll take him. I'll take all your DK Metcalf. But
100%.
I want to take this moment to give Mike Clay a shout out.
There you go.
Mike Clay with the gutsiest call he's made all year on wide receiver cornerback matchups was to downgrade DK Metcalf against Patrick Peterson, who does not strike most as the same old Patrick Peterson that he was for a long time. Mike, you nailed it. That's why we love having you on the show. We love having you on Fantasy Football Now. Read Mike Clay's work every time you
have listen, and I can't go that far with you. Like, I actually think, listen, you know, McLaurin had the good game against Peterson. Like, I'm not there on DK Metcalf, but great call by Mike. You know, David Moore helped him out with that holding call. David Moore. David Moore. And, what are you going to do?
Mike
does a
very
great job.
Diligently wide receiver.
No. Mike does a phenomenal job. I don't want to take away. Mike does a phenomenal job. It was a great call. By the way, Mike's made many great calls all season long. His segments are among the highlights of Fantasy Football Now every Sunday morning.
I want to close the show out with a quick question about Monday Night Football. Daryl Henderson, Field Yates, looking for a big game here. What is it that you need from Daryl Henderson?
I need 76 rushing yards from you tonight, Daryl Henderson, and I can secure my first win on Red Zone of the season. My team stinks. It's terrible, but
Daryl Henderson, I want you to take it easy because I know you've been dealing with a little injury issue, and if you can just, slow your roll a little bit.
Stefania and I both took the under, but I also have Daryl Henderson in the War Room League where I needed DK Metcalf to have a nice game. So I need Henderson to have a huge game. So what I'm hoping for is 74 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns.
And 3 touchdowns?
That's what I need from Daryl Henderson.
But it comes down to for 95 yards. Which of the three of us do you like the best?
Probably. There you go.
Probably Stefania, anyway. For being honest. We are back on Tuesday. Waiver wires. Recap of Monday Night Football. Go Daryl Henderson, go. Plus all the latest on the injury updates of the day. For Matthew, Stefania, Daniel, I'm Field. Talk to you tomorrow.
Peace out. He's Field, yeah.